Hi, and welcome to Filmmakers Compass Podcast, a show where we talk about movies and, well, more movies. I'm D-Man, joined by CP. CP, how are you doing today?
Dude, I am so exhausted.
I can imagine, because I know what you've been up to, and it includes a lot of walking, a lot of talking, and a lot of comic books.
That is exactly what I was thinking about, too. But we'll get into that later.
Yeah, so on this episode, I know we have kind of a fun topic in store, but before we get into that, as always, CP, I do want to do a little bit of our shout-outs. So first up, in response to a photo that we posted to the Filmmakers Compass podcast Instagram account is Ivor, who went on to say, glad you two can spend time together, because CP, we actually did spend some time together and we posted a photo of us in the same location. So, which was a lot of fun. And Ivor, you are correct. We had a great time and we're going to get into it.
So, and I just want to say, D-Man, I'm glad that we get to spend time together too. Not as much as we used to, but dude, it's always a good time to see you in person.
For sure. Well, next up is actually from just a user and then a string of numbers. But in reference to The Matrix, we kind of talked about how, or I think I mentioned maybe specifically how Kung Fu movies were a lot like Westerns. And as that genre kind of faded from relevance over time, so had Kung Fu movies. And somebody rightfully pointed out that Jackie Chan was really big in the 90s prior to The Matrix. You know, that was when he really shined, I think. Rush Hour, I don't know what year it came out.
No, the Rush Hour movies, Shanghai Noon, Shanghai Nights.
Right. Now, I know Jackie Chan is using a number of different styles and acrobatics here, not just Kung Fu. But they did sort of make a good point that I wanted to acknowledge, which was, no, I did not mean that Kung Fu movies were non-existent or martial arts in general weren't around. I just meant that the blending of the genres worked really well for The Matrix, and we saw a lot of that sort of show up in action movies after the fact. But I did not, you know, I wasn't trying to downplay martial arts films exclusively, or for that matter, pretend that they don't exist.
All right, good, because Jean-Claude Van Damme would be very disappointed in you.
Yeah, right? Like, hey, I didn't want to get into all that. We have to give a huge shout out, CP, to a big congratulations to Eric Drucker, who just had a baby.
Yay! So,
very happy for you, man. There's a new podcast listener out there, so I'm very happy for us.
Me too, man.
No, seriously, Drucker, very happy for you. That's awesome. And hope you're enjoying fatherhood. And then lastly, CP, I got to give some big birthday shout outs this week to none other than Matt Hellison, Julian Gutierrez, and power listener Connor Geary. So happy birthday to all of you. I know they're all actually, I think Connor and Julian share the same birthday, and Matt's is the day before. So happy birthday to all of you. And I hope you guys had fantastic celebration.
Yeah. On that note, happy birthday to all of you except for Matt.
sorry, Helson. We can, if you ever want to come on and debate that, we can. So CP, did you have any shout outs on this episode before we start diving into some stuff?
Yeah. Shout out to all the awesome creatives that you and I met at WonderCon. Hopefully some of them are going to check this out because we connected with them on social media. So thank you everybody for, you know, just a really fun time.
Yeah. And on that note, CP, before we get into our box office breakdown and everything, let's talk a little WonderCon. So interestingly enough, we went to Comic-Con and now WonderCon in sort of the Tiger Slam manner, not within the same calendar year, but within the same year.
True.
Which was quite fun. And tell us a little bit about, you know, what's going on at WonderCon that makes it sort of an annual trip for you guys.
WonderCon is really weird. If you don't know what it is, it's actually put on by San Diego Comic-Con, the company. And what's really cool about WonderCon is it's significantly smaller. Part of that is the Anaheim Convention Center is just a smaller venue, but happening in the spring when it does, in the Anaheim location, it doesn't attract the number of people that Comic-Con does. So two really cool things about that are, first of all, this is like Comic-Con if you went in the 1990s or the early 2000s.
Before
it blew up into the mega, you know, pop culture phenomenon that it is. So it's kind of cool that it's a little smaller, it's a little more intimate, and you actually get a lot better opportunities to connect with big shot creators. And the other thing that is fun is Comic-Con actually kind of pilots panels and events and things like that at WonderCon in order to get them ready for Comic-Con. So that's another really cool reason to go to WonderCon, because you might get a taste for what's next to Comic-Con.
Yeah, as I think, you know, to your point that you initially said about it sort of being like the sister show or like the smaller version of Comic-Con, you know, as somebody that had never really been to either, I'd been downtown when, you know, San Diego, when Comic-Con was happening, but I'd never gone to the actual convention. So now having gone to both, I think the way I would describe it is like Comic-Con is so massive in terms of sheer square footage, just the footprint that the convention center actually has and where you can go and the different floors and all this stuff. But I would describe it as like, Comic-Con is so big that if you knew other people that were there, you probably won't run into them unless you text them and are like, let's meet up.
Yeah, for sure.
Where I feel like WonderCon is 100% like, if you know other people there, like you should run into them somewhere. Like, yeah, if you just walk around enough, you'll probably find them.
Yeah, I would agree.
And it's still a good size. It just speaks to how insanely big Comic-Con actually is. And I went in a year when they were having the writers and the actors strikes. You know, I think at that time the actors were just in solidarity, but eventually struck.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think even to a certain extent, while the foot traffic was still really high, one of the things that was different about the Comic-Con I was at was that people weren't waiting in these long lines for Marvel's big announcement and Robert Downey Jr. and all this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it seemed, I think, a little bit even more busier from a foot traffic standpoint, because everybody was just kind of going to all these different things rather than waiting 8 hours in line for one big.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I felt like that was the vibe I got from WonderCon too, was that there were a lot of cool panels. There were a lot of really neat booths. Something that stood out to me was it felt like WonderCon had more merchandise to me. Now, I don't know if that's just where I walked. I mean, maybe I didn't go down every aisle at Comic-Con.
Well, I think part of it is that so much of the Comic-Con floor is relegated to these massive corporate booths, you know, Nickelodeon and Lego and Netflix, and even the comic book companies themselves, IDW, Marvel. And when you go to Comic-Con, it's smaller sellers, it's artists, and, you know, indie book retailers. So I think that that's kind of a cool thing, just in the sense that you get more one-on-one with the actual sellers because the corporate brands just don't show up for it.
Yeah, like the t-shirt towers were at WonderCon. They had Artist Alley, but they actually did have like a fairly decent size set of booths dedicated to boxes of comic books. You could just buy comic books.
Yeah.
Which I don't remember so much at Comic-Con. Like you could just go, you know, kind of browse through and find books. And then the other thing was like action figures. And some of that, I felt like there were actual booths with like merchandise walls, you know, action figures on there, versus there were definitely booths at Comic-Con that had action figures, but they were often in really cool displays. They looked like they were specialty figures rather than what you would have found in the 90s at Toys R Us or Walmart or something.
Yeah.
You know, and so you found a little bit more of, you know, mainstream merchandise here as well, like resellers, which was cool because a lot of that is pretty cool.
Yeah, dude. It was
so
a little different.
I also want to say that I did like the setup itself of the overall convention was actually very similar from Comic-Con to WonderCon. But I did like the Anaheim Convention Center because they have sort of a atrium. It's like an outdoor area that I thought worked really well because it's not against a main road. So it's a little bit more quiet. You can go take photos, you can go cool off and probably find a seat and eat some food. So yeah. I thought logistically, like just the convention center itself, that can't be changed at Comic-Con or San Diego. So I thought that was nice. I thought it worked.
Yeah. And I like, they roll all the food trucks up. It's, you know, one of the big problems I always have with Comic-Con is if you don't want to pay to eat in the convention center, it's a hike to get food. But yeah. WonderCon has, you know, food trucks lined up right out front. There's tons of restaurants that are within, you know, a minute, 2 minutes from the convention center. So that's also a really big plus as well.
And for anybody that's just curious, I think the biggest difference is just the sheer scale of what Comic-Con represents. So the focus here at WonderCon was on the actual convention, the panels, the booths, and you know, cosplay. There were a lot of people in costume, right? Mm-hmm. In fact, you mentioned when we were there that it might even actually feel like more people are in costume, even though it's overall less, just because they represent a higher percentage of the people there.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was pretty cool. But here's the difference. Comic-Con is so huge and mainstream that, I mean, CP, behind the convention center down by the harbor, they had massive parties and booths and boat parties. After Comic-Con was over, there's meetups at restaurants, hotel bars, there are rooftop parties, it is wild. And to me, that was hands down the biggest difference. I got a hint of that, and you can probably speak to this a little bit more. They had like the Hilton right there, and there was a cool vibe there, but that felt even less than Comic-Con still.
Yeah, there's nowhere near the organized extracurriculars, quote unquote, after the day ends at the convention center, like there is at Comic-Con.
Yeah, Comic-Con was wild. Literally, depending on who you got your badges from and all this different stuff, you could get access to boats. They had like clubs. They had cool, like big blow up things that you could go explore. They had, remember the DBZ booth at the mm-hmm. hotel next door. Mm-hmm. It was like, all this stuff was crazy. So much to do. And I remember, I think I talked about it on this show that like at Comic-Con, I felt out of shape. Like when it was over, I was like, dude, CP, I don't know if I can walk anymore. Like, I need to sit down. You know, my feet hurt. But WonderCon, I was like, no, I feel good. This was fun. I'm tired still, but like, I'm good.
Yeah.
I mean, it probably also helps. I'm a little bit more in shape now than I was for Comic-Con.
But yeah, it's just nowhere near the size.
So, I think, but it was a lot of fun.
I mean, again, for me, the coolest thing about going to WonderCon is the access you get to professionals. Two examples. I was walking down, you know, we were walking across the floor. We ran into Mark Bernardin, who we had met previously at other conventions, but we saw him, we chatted, and it was nice to catch up to someone in a very informal way. Whereas at Comic-Con, there's much more of a kind of like everyone's rushing, you know, it's professionals are getting to panels. There's not a lot of just hang out and talk to people on the floor. Same thing. We ended up meeting Todd McFarlane, who is one of the biggest creators in the world of comic books. This is the guy who invented Spawn and Venom and is the owner of, you know, one of the co-owners of Image Comics. And he was walking around the floor, came up to our friend's booth, and we just had a nice little 10-minute conversation with him. And you don't get that at Comic-Con. You know, years ago, people talked about how you used to, you know, if you went in the 90s, you know, you'd run into Stan Lee walking down the hallway and he'd sit there and talk to you. But that's because it wasn't the Comic-Con that it is now.
For sure. Well, that's incredible. I don't know if you have anything left to add on WonderCon specifically, but I did have a great time with you. It was fun hanging out with everybody. And I always appreciate the opportunity to get to go.
No, it was a good time. So I'm glad you can make it, dude. And for all our listeners, you know, if you plan ahead, you might just see us there next year.
Yeah. And at WonderCon, you could probably run into us. So CP, I'm gonna throw it over to you now for our box office breakdown.
D-Man, that makes me so excited. You didn't forget this segment.
No, I did not this week. I'm on top of it. I'm back.
So, box office breakdown. First of all, we have to apologize since we did not record last week. The box office numbers have shifted a little bit. But when we look at the domestic box office, the number 5 movie is Immaculate. The number 4 movie this past weekend was Kung Fu Panda 4.
Man, that thing has legs. Yeah, that thing has legs.
The number three movie, always excited to see this, Dune Part 2.
Going strong.
Two is a movie that we have actually not talked about on this podcast yet, and that's Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, which made $73 million last weekend. And number one, a film that I know you saw, Godzilla Kong The New Empire, and that made $80 million last weekend, this past weekend.
All right. Well, one of the things I wanted to make note on for the box office breakdown is it looks like Dune Part 2 has overtaken Kung Fu Panda, which had also overtaken Dune at various points. So they're swapping back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Now, I know when it comes to Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, one of the things I did see in the headlines was that it did have a sort of terrible second week drop off, about 65% drop off, which was not great.
Yeah.
You know, I know word of mouth was, I want to say, about average. I think people that are Ghostbusters fans liked the movie and enjoyed it. But if, I don't know, you're not really into the Ghostbusters, you'd probably be like, pass. So, I don't know. What were your thoughts on that movie?
Well, I loved it. Obviously, I love Ghostbusters. I thought it was a nice follow-up to Afterlife. And I really liked the fact that the original Ghostbusters held a more prominent role in the movie. I liked the return to New York City. I thought those were really great choices. I actually think part of the problem here was, and I believe you and I mentioned it beforehand, I was a little surprised at the marketing running up to Ghostbusters, because I felt like it kind of just dropped on us.
Well, I think what they were banking on was that the fan base would really pick up the slack here. Word of mouth would be really strong. You know, I thought the movie did a few things really well, which is they moved the setting back to New York City, which is, you know, a welcome return for the Ghostbusters franchise. I mean, I mm-hmm. feel like that's where the home of the Ghostbusters is. And they kept that sort of family dynamic from Ghostbusters Afterlife, where they're not really doing, I think you had called it when we talked, you had called it like a comedy horror mm-hmm. mix for the original mm-hmm. Ghostbusters, where when you think about it, like Ghostbusters in the first movie is a little bit more of a story of entrepreneurship than it is like friendship or family or anything.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. There is that love story with Venkman, but otherwise, like, it is about them sort of like starting this business and proving their existence, their reason to exist, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, Frozen Empire maintains that sort of family dynamic, which plays out, and it's a little bit more family friendly, I would say. I like the way that they used Ray and Winston in particular. Obviously, Egon's mentions as sort of the patriarch of the new Ghostbusters family works, but inherently, none of them know anything about, you know, ghosts and the afterlife and or have any money. They're coming from Oklahoma.
Yeah.
So they weren't even, you know, quote unquote Ghostbusters in a business sense. So to have Winston's character be there to bankroll the new Ghostbusters and Ray there to sort of introduce them to all the supernatural elements, I thought worked really well. Venkman coming back, I really liked him in the role, Bill Murray coming back in when he interviewed the Firemaster.
Yeah.
I liked that for him a lot. I thought that worked really well for his character. When he comes back at the end, I think that was a little bit more for the fans to get him in a suit and have him suited up. But I do like that. CP, I want to, so on that note, why do you think there was such a drop off? If, as you and I are fans of Ghostbusters, we enjoyed the film, why do you think people maybe are taking a pass on this one?
I don't know. That's a really good question. I mean, part of it is probably if you have little kids, I don't know that I'd take him to see Ghostbusters. You might be more inclined to take him to see Kung Fu Panda or a movie with monsters fighting.
That is a good point. My wife, Steph, actually asked her niece the other day if she would like to go see Ghostbusters. And she said, "What is that? I don't even know." And so didn't have any interest in it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't know if it's... Because, I mean, even say what you will about the original Ghostbusters. I mean, there was the cartoon that I know kids were associated with it, you know, and then you have that built-in audience.
Yeah.
Because, God, when did Ghostbusters come out? 84?
Yeah.
We're
long
30?
Time ago. Long time
Is that
30? Ago.
30 years? No, 40. 40 years.
Yeah, 40 years from now. Holy cow. And so I think, you know, a lot of the original fans of Ghostbusters is probably an older audience. While they did have the movie, you know, come out a few years ago, Afterlife, I don't know that it's permeated younger kids in the way that some other older franchises
Stranger
have.
Stranger Things is new. I know they sort of had that vibe, but like, I feel like kids gravitated to that. And I don't know if they did with this franchise the same way.
Yeah. And the other thing is, I mean, it is about ghosts. So parents may be like, oh, I'm not going to take my little 5-year-olds to see this movie. But, and then, as I said, the other problem was there was just a lack of marketing. And despite the fact that I thought they did some great stuff for the fans, looking at you, AMC specialty popcorn bucket, it just wasn't in our face for 4 or 6 weeks. Like, it should have been to really be picked up by everyone who wasn't a hardcore Ghostbusters fan.
Now, I want to know if this hurt you, because I think technically both box office and Rotten Tomatoes score, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire came in below Ghostbusters Answer the Call in both categories.
I don't know how that's even possible.
Yeah, more people went and saw that one. Maybe just from the controversy alone?
Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, that's, they are big name comedians. There is that. So,
but,
and this
Paul
one is
Rudd's
sequel.
Also not a nobody.
Yeah, no, I thought he was great. I mean, I think, okay, I have a question for you then. I'm going to throw it over to you. What do you think the future looks like for Ghostbusters?
I think that especially now that Ghost Corp, the production company, has been formed, and Jason Reitman seems all in on kind of preserving the legacy that his father built with the original Ghostbusters film, I think they're going to continue it. I don't know that they're going to continue it with the characters and Afterlife in this one. They'll probably do another movie, but I think the true future of Ghostbusters is taking this ghost-busting concept and exporting it to different styles of movie and different locations.
That is a brilliant idea. I think you had even mentioned to me, like, imagine a Ghostbusters franchise in, like, New Orleans.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, something like that would be really cool. You know, you could have different characters, different Ghostbusters. It doesn't always have to be the comedy horror genre. Like, we don't have to, you know, emulate Venkman in every iteration of the Ghostbusters. But, you know, the ideas and, like, on how to, you know, it's a franchise and building a business and all that can stay. The mm-hmm. logo. But you can go try new things. You could do a horror Ghostbusters. That'd be mm-hmm. cool.
Right?
And I'd go.
And you could have a lot of fun with it. So I think that that's what the, I think Sony's not going to give up on it. It's made them too much money over time, but I will be curious to see what they do with the franchise. And then lastly, when we jump over to worldwide box office, now this is a little surprising. Ghostbusters isn't even in the top 10, six movies for this year. And the number three movies in the worldwide box office are 3, Kong and Godzilla, The New Empire.
That one came in hot.
Already jumped up. That has made almost $200 million worldwide. Kung Fu Panda, that has made $347 worldwide. And of course, I love to see this. Dune Part 2 is number one at $626 million. And surprisingly, about 60% of that is from the international box office.
Wow, that's pretty good. So it's performing well internationally. That's awesome. And then Kong versus Godzilla, that's actually quite impressive as a debut internationally. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand, like, obviously Godzilla as a property is an international brand. Yeah. You know, Kong and Godzilla also supersede language barriers, I think, by and large.
Pretty easy to subtitle that movie.
Right. It's a very visual, mm-hmm. you know, treat. So I think there's a lot of reasons why that will end up performing pretty well. Having seen it, I'll say that it is a lot of what you would expect.
Okay.
I mean, that's spoiler free.
Give an audience what they want to see.
Yeah. You want to see some kaiju and you want to see some monsters fighting each other with the city as a backdrop. You will see it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite fun in that regard.
Okay. Okay.
So is it a masterpiece? It is not. So we're not going to, you know, do a whole review here, but no, like, it's not, you know, Godfather with monsters. It's just monsters. All right. Well, that does it for our box office breakdown. And thank you, CP. I know it's always fun to take a look because, well, we do it anyway. So might as well talk about it. But our main topic this week is something that we wanted to get to a few months back, and we've sort of push off, I think, because there was like the Oscars and a couple different things. But we really wanted to talk a little bit about the state of Marvel and the MCU in 2024 and where Deadpool and Wolverine sort of fit into this whole machine, because 2024 is a weird year for Marvel. Let's face it.
Oh yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and lay it out there. 2024, the only Marvel movie coming out is Deadpool 3 in terms of major release. Mm-hmm. And it will be connected to the MCU, so we are going to count it. Jonathan Majors was, you know, he went through his legal troubles and has been let go from the Marvel franchise. So as far as Kang's concerned, everything's up in the air. There's a lot of options. You're in the multiverse, but at the same time, like, plans have changed. I think Marvel in general as a brand has never been lower, going all the way back to like original Iron Man. Yeah. You know, we're not going to go Marvel's whole history, but MCU film history here.
Yeah.
Right now, I think interest is at an all-time low. I think their storylines are in disarray. You know, it doesn't feel like there's any momentum building to anything at the moment.
Agreed.
I'm not sure exactly how this happened or how they fix it, or if Deadpool can fix it alone. I mean, maybe he can. I don't know. We'll start there. Throw it over to you. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Oh boy. That's a very big question. I think the first thing is we have to acknowledge that Deadpool and Wolverine. I think it's Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yeah.
We'll call it Deadpool 3. Is going to be very different than Deadpool 1 and Deadpool 2.
Definitely. If you've seen the trailer, you know.
Yeah. A big reason for that is now Marvel and DC and Disney are involved, versus before it was Fox and their segment of the Marvel universe. But I think a bigger thing is, even when we look at the creative choices behind the filmmakers making these movies. And the biggest difference that I notice is that obviously Tim Miller did the first one, the director of the second one, I'm spacing on his name, but he was one of the co-directors of John Wick, right? Had a very, I would say both of them have a very mature style, focusing on the violence, on the stunts, on the action, and a mature comedy. The director for this film is Shawn Levy. And he's worked with Ryan Reynolds on a lot of movies, mainly Free Guy and The Adam Project. So he has a working relationship with Ryan Reynolds, but I don't see him as the ideal director to be directing this franchise. And that's just because the types of movies that he's done in the past are Cheaper by the Dozen, The Pink Panther, The Night at the Museum franchise. Exactly. I don't see him being the right guy to step in and really create this heavy action, violence, comedic gore that I think fans have come to expect from the Deadpool movies.
Now, Marvel has maintained that Deadpool will maintain those characteristics. But like you said, I mean, given the director and the choices that they might make, I mean, yes, they'll probably have moments of that, but it might not be as gratuitous as it once was. Or for that matter, like, it might not, that might be the direction they're going, you know, as we move forward, which is, you know, may probably phase some of that out.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think the adult jokes and things like that from earlier films are necessarily going to be in this third version.
Yeah. So that's interesting, because that is one of the things, you know, along with breaking the fourth wall, like, that's what makes Deadpool unique as a hero compared to a lot of his other contemporaries.
Yes.
Is that R-rated, gratuitous violence, cursing, you know, sexual innuendo, even maybe some sexually charged content.
Yeah.
And then, you know, actual blood.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a very gory movie franchise. So I don't know. That would be weird if they were to change it up that much. My guess is for this one, they won't change it up too much. They're going to keep it fairly similar, because they're not going to want to piss off fans. I know right now fans' perception of this movie is that it'll save the MCU, which seems drastic to me. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I just think it's kind of a ludicrous concept. I think people are, I mean, Ryan Reynolds loves playing Deadpool, and people love that he has embraced the character so wholeheartedly. Fans are obviously excited that Hugh Jackman is coming out of retirement to play Wolverine one more time, and he's done it so well. But I think the problem is, you know, putting all the hopes on this one movie, which is really the success of the two, of this movie, is watching these two actors interact. It's not the type of movie that is going to set forth a grand overall story. It's not going to introduce mega themes and story threads or the big bad for the next phase of the MCU. So I think thinking that this is the lifeline that Marvel needs is foolish on behalf of the fans and on behalf of Marvel, because it's just not going to be that.
Yeah, I think, you know, a good thing to point at too is the trailer, which I believe performed incredibly well. It was dropped right around the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be the most successful trailer of all time, beating even Endgame.
Yeah.
And some of these other movies. But when you actually watch the trailer, it's a pretty standard trailer. Like, it's not so good that I would be like, CP, I don't care if you've never seen Deadpool, like, you need to go see this movie. So part of me thinks that, like, a lot of this heavy lifting is just being done by the fans, because they're still like, hey, listen, we might be in a down period for comic book movies, but we still love comic book movies and we still want them. You know, obviously, like I mentioned earlier, I don't think Marvel has any other major releases in 2024. They've pared back their entire schedule. And Deadpool's like the only major one coming out.
Well, and I think the bigger issue is when we look at that trailer, I think the success of it isn't even so much the story or anything about the movie. I think it's the fan service in a yellow Wolverine costume.
Now, what do you think about Hugh Jackman coming back to the role? Because I think a lot of fans believe he had a perfect send-off in Logan. And then obviously adding in the comic accurate costume that has eluded fandom for years. Like, what are your thoughts? Good move, bad move?
I mean, I think it's a fine move. I'm not going to say it's a great move. I'm not going to say a terrible move.
We saw a couple of those Wolverines at WonderCon. So,
I mean, fans are definitely excited about it, and it's always great to get your fans excited. But again, I think everybody loves Hugh Jackman. And I think the fact that he's willing to step back into the role is great for the character and great for Marvel. But I think the other problem is, I mean, at his age, obviously the reason why he said, I can't keep doing this, is it took a physical toll on his body. I don't think he wants to keep doing Wolverine, you know?
Well, the costume might help with that, you know.
True.
Suit him up a little bit and be like, hey, we won't have these gratuitous shots of you just like flexing like you're, you know, a Greek god. And we could probably get away with that. So I don't know. I like the idea of getting him in the comic accurate suit. I think that's cool. I think though that the novelty of that wears off so fast, like if you don't do anything with the character. I don't know, like him in a suit, you're like, okay, cool. It's like introducing a new color of a lightsaber blade. You're like, oh, that's so cool. I thought you could only have red and blue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But like, if you don't do anything cool, like it that wears off really quick.
Exactly.
So I don't know. And then I'm also interested, you know, the trailer does not really explain exactly what Wolverine is doing there. So like, is there any other reason than just pairing Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds together? You know, like all things, is there a reason for this to exist other than money? You know,
I mean,
I don't know. I can't tell yet.
And I don't know what the story is behind this particular film. And we're not going to know till July, but I do feel like that's exactly why I don't think that the future of the MCU is in good hands based on this one film, because it feels like a one-trick pony. You're giving us Deadpool, which we want. Now you're, you know, souping it up by giving us Wolverine, which we want. But I don't see anything to build off of unless you're going to keep doing another Wolverine and Deadpool movie, which, I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Deadpool 3 is going to make $1 billion in the box office. It's going to be a great payday for Disney, which they desperately need.
Yeah.
But that's all I see it doing.
Yeah. And I don't know. I really hope I'm pleasantly surprised when I go see it. And I'm like, holy shit. Like, if you love the MCU, like, this is must watch. Like, you can't miss it. You got to watch. I hope that's the case. Because it's been a while. I mean, probably since Endgame, or probably I would say No Way Home was probably the last one where you're like, oh my God, like, if you're a Spider-Man fan, like, you gotta go.
Well, the other thing at risk here too is the fact that what made Deadpool 1 and arguably Deadpool 2 so successful is the novelty factor. But I think a little bit of that, you know, we've been desensitized to that a little bit, right?
Yeah.
We've now had James Gunn R-rated version of the Suicide Squad. We've had uber violent and sexually charged comic book shows like The Boys and Invincible from Prime that, again, are kind of cutting into that same thing that Deadpool did originally when it came onto the big screen. And people were like, whoa, I've never seen a comic book movie in theaters like that.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, from the trailer, it does hint at some multiverse, you know, hijinks and this and that, which almost every Marvel movie
seems to be doing. No, stop it, Marvel. Stop it.
But here's the thing. When we look at the larger MCU, so not, you know, with, let's set aside Deadpool and Wolverine now for a second and look a little bit larger here at the overall MCU. You know, where is all this going? A lot of the narrative threads and narrative momentum that Marvel was building through the phase four have essentially fallen flat. I don't know about you, but I can't think of any of the franchises, you know, whether it's Shang-Chi at this point, I'm like, how old is that now? Like 4 years old?
Yeah.
You know, Elementals.
Which I don't even think they're continuing that one, the Eternals, right?
Yeah, Eternals. I mean, there's things that happened to that movie.
Marvel was a colossal failure. Or the Marvels, I mean, was a colossal failure.
Dude, and that was the last movie Marvel came out with, was the Marvels. And it was like wholeheartedly rejected by the fandom. Where, again, I don't think average fans went into it with the intention of being like, I hope this sucks. I think everybody that, you know, was just casual was like, oh, I hope this is great. And there's just no denying that, like, the movie was, you know, not fantastic, not marvelous. Yeah. And I mean, it just seems like, I'm trying to think of what is a story that's still open-ended? Even the multiverse story from the television show Loki, you know, with like the time variance and all this, worked so well. But Loki got a bow on it, right? It ended. Yep. And it ended in a way that is not open-ended. It doesn't appear that, A, there's much left narratively for a season 3, or for that matter, to explore deeper in the films. Yep. So it's kind of like, and that's where, like, Victor Timely and Kang, and that's sort of where all that came from. So it feels right that it would end if that actor's gone.
Yeah, right.
But where does the story go? I mean, we've had Doctor Strange, the Multiverse of Madness. There, you know, we've had Thor, Love and Thunder. Where did it, and, you know, Black Panther. Is there anything from any of these that you're like, I can't wait to see what happens next?
No, and part of it is, it feels like to me, I know Kevin has come out multiple times and said that there is a plan, and if we pay hard enough attention, right, we can see it at work in the recent phase. But look, they just lost their main big bad that they were building to. It's been drawn out for so long. Honestly, I think it's at the point where Marvel just needs to blow it up and start over.
You know, I wouldn't be opposed to that. So I know they're playing in this multiverse sandbox, which totally allows you the opportunity to do that sort of in-world, right? Like, we could go explore another multiverse thread where you can recast Tony Stark and Captain America and Thor and everybody, right? And then just kind of have fun in that world. But I also wouldn't be opposed to just saying, like, you know what? we need some fresh juice, and it's not happening in world. We're just gonna reboot.
And we've talked about this, you know, a few times on the podcast. I think there's a couple major things working against the current version of the MCU. Part of it is the cast is too massive, right? There's so many characters and side characters from all the TV shows, all the movies. We're technically not even sure at this point who's still an Avenger and who's not, and who is alive and who's not. On top of that, all the characters are dealing with these massive world events that no matter who we're looking at or what we're following, the events of Thanos and the blip are still, you know, trickling down, and this multiverse that they keep peeling open, keep showing up everywhere. I'm almost just like, you know what? Close the book on all that stuff. Say, hey, fans, that was the Avengers. Now we're starting over, and this is going to be the Dark Avengers or the New Avengers or the Young Avengers. And it's a totally different storyline with a different group of Avengers. Check in and follow them and see what they're all about.
Yeah, and I think, too, it's worth noting, as you did with Deadpool, that the sort of novelty of the team-up film has also worn off. Mm. I think we've gone through a full cycle of it now where, you know, obviously the first Avengers was this sort of comic book fans' wet dream. It was like, oh, my God, I can't believe they brought all these characters together in one movie. And then that pinnacles with Endgame, where essentially they build out this whole world and all the characters come together in one final battle. So the novelty then of just getting to see these characters together on screen is much more expected these days than it is a wow moment. You're like, oh, okay, they're going to do a Young Avengers. You're like, okay. It doesn't have that same sort of like, oh my God, they're going to do something crazy. You're like, I don't know if you're into it. Like, check it out. But if you're not, like, you could probably pass. You're like, it's probably just like Avengers, but with different characters. So, well, I don't know. I think that affects some of the hype train, you know?
Well, and I think that from a logistical standpoint, a reset also saves Disney some major issues, which are, one, you don't have to keep weaving these ever-growing story threads back into your new films. You get to start fresh, which makes it the job a lot easier for writers. But it also allows us to reduce the scope and the cast, so we don't have to keep bringing in all these other MCU folk that keep appearing in different films into this one, jacking up the budget higher.
Yeah, right. Like, how is Moon Knight going to be a part of the MCU? You know, or is it? I don't even know.
And if he is, I mean, that means now we have to pay Oscar Isaac to be in this the next Avengers film, whether we can afford him or not.
Yeah, I just don't know. It's like too convoluted now. It's almost too much. It's too much to keep track of. It's too much to care about. And it's just probably too much money.
Right?
Like, it's just a little bit too big, I think, for even what they were doing. And, you know, I think when things keep getting bigger, like, there's probably that point where, right, the momentum has to rise with it. Mm-hmm. But when those two detach, you got a real problem.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we hit that moment after Endgame where it was like the momentum had been either on par with or probably exceeding even what Marvel was doing, because everybody wanted to see what was going to happen. And then somewhere it detached and the momentum fell off. Well, they still got to keep paying for all this. And if you're not bringing in, like you said, $1 billion box office receipts, then what are you doing? So maybe it's time to, you know, hey, let's do a little reset. I mean, no one in their right mind thought the MCU would go forever. It doesn't need to be indefinite. It's a shared universe. And we got the story. It was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it was absolutely incredible what they were able to pull off. But I don't know, maybe try something different, but start at the beginning again and not just shoehorn in everything.
And I think there's a lot of problems too from the logistical standpoint of what the MCU is now, right? Since the MCU was created through today, Marvel's gone through significant changes.
Yeah.
Right? Marvel Comics has been acquired by Disney. So you can actually truly integrate what's going on at a comic book level with the MCU cinematically going forward. That wasn't something that they could do when they first started the films. They also were sharing the MCU with other studios, which they don't have to do anymore. And the final thing was, with the advent of streaming really blowing up in that time period, we got television series, whether it's the original Netflix ones or the recent Disney Plus ones, that I think were created as an afterthought. Whereas going forward, if you restart things, you can say, okay, let's now look at how we're going to roll these in and integrate them into creating a truly immersive storytelling experience.
Yeah. No, I think it's a great point. You know, having access to Disney Plus, which wasn't there when the MCU started, it does offer opportunities, you know, and it feels like at this point, like, they've mostly squandered them. You know, I feel like when Disney Plus announced, say, WandaVision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like that was can't miss like TV. I remember we used to, like, if a new episode came out, we were stoked for it.
Yep.
And it's gotten so diluted down to now, like, at best, maybe once the show's already released, if they don't drop it all at once, I'm like, maybe I'll check it out.
Right.
But when it first came out, like, it was like, oh my God, I got to watch it, you know? And to their credit, I still do that with most Star Wars shows. I mean, I don't know. I'm not saying that Star Wars shows are superior outright, but my interest in them is still like, hey, if there's a new episode of Ahsoka, I want to watch it.
You're like, it's Star Wars, I'm there.
Yeah, I'm there.
Which and you I no used longer to be have there with Marvel.
Yeah, I used to be there with Marvel, where it was like, oh my gosh, there's a new episode. Like, we got to check it out. Where I'm like, they've already released multiple shows now where I'm like, I haven't even watched them.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not going to lie, I'm like a target demographic here. So you would think, I don't know, a reboot might help sort of ground everything again and allow us to invest in new characters and the new story. Will it be as big as the Infinity Saga? It might not be, but I mean, what you're doing right now is not really working either.
That's true. That's a good point.
So I don't know. And then I think too, just the idea of like, you and I have talked about this, but the multiverse in general is such a conceptual thing in terms of understanding how it works and what the rules are and all this stuff. And it feels like sometimes the stories and stuff, they get convoluted around all of these high concept things, where when you look at, like, you know, Tony Stark and the relationships that he had in his solo movies, you know, they're pretty grounded and straightforward and easy to understand.
Well, and I think that is exactly proof as to why it's foolish to put the hopes of the MCU on Daredevil, right?
Deadpool.
Yes, Deadpool. You're right. My bad. That was a mistake. I know.
Don't
the difference
do it on Daredevil.
But think about it, right? Robert Downey Jr. portraying Tony Stark, this incredibly complex character with a great arc, which we follow from the first movie, arguably through the linchpin of it all, Avengers Endgame.
Yeah,
this is Tony Stark's arc, and it works. Now at Deadpool. He's kind of a gimmicky character. He's much more akin to Charlie Kelly from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, right? Yeah. He's the wild card. And that's why people enjoy watching him, because we don't know what he's going to do. We don't know how he's going to comedically change the circumstances. But it's not a character with true depth. He's not really grounded. His struggles aren't relatable. This isn't the type of character that we can build an arc around for an entire cinematic universe, right? He's one off, two off, three off. And what makes him interesting is how he adjusts the dynamic of characters we already know when he's put into the mix.
Yeah, I do.
Eventually,
I do
that's
like
gonna get
his,
old.
Yeah, his relationship arc I thought was good. And it's not, I don't want to say that it's not that arcs can't be built around that character, because I think they can. I mean, there's more to explore there. But yeah, the gimmicky side of a character like Deadpool, which is his fourth wall breaking commentary, his, you know, sort of doing things in a unique way that, you know, the other superheroes can't, it does wear off.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. Again, it's like, is Deadpool going to be Tony Stark in the MCU going forward? I don't think so. So, like, why are we pinning all our hopes on Deadpool and Wolverine if, like, you know, we won't see Deadpool again until freaking an Avengers movie when he comes in and just has some sly commentary and kicks ass?
Yep, right.
You're like, you need, I don't know. You need central casting. You need central characters, dude. You need a Tony Stark. You need Steve Rogers. These guys that it's like, hey, despite I love Spider-Man, I love Doctor Strange, but they're not the main character.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are in their own movie, but they're not for the overall MCU.
Central storyline. Yeah.
So unless Deadpool or Wolverine are going to be that people, and I have doubts about it simply because I didn't even know Hugh Jackman was going to play Wolverine again, then you're like, I can't imagine he's going to come back and like be this central driving figure for whatever the new story is going to be.
Yeah. Right.
Dude, it hurts my head thinking about it all because I love Marvel and I want it to be awesome. You know, it was awesome. And that was the best part, was like, man, I remember like it literally you'd go see like Captain America Winter Soldier and like I'd have to call you and be like, dude, this movie's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you just don't get it anymore. And I mean, I've been a little harsh and I want to clarify. I'm obviously excited to see Deadpool 3. It's great that Ryan Reynolds is coming back. I'm always excited to see Hugh Jackman, whether he's Wolverine or not. So it should be a lot of fun. But I don't think that this is the golden ticket that Marvel needs right now to keep things progressing in a positive way.
Yeah. Well, because that's the vibe. That's the vibe we're getting online, is that a lot of fans are like, oh, everything will be fine after Deadpool comes out. And I'm like, I don't know. So, CP, I feel like this is a topic where, like, Ivor's input might be useful. I don't know. I'm curious what his comments are, because I feel like he's going to yell at me.
I mean, I guess I'm really interested in Ivor's input if he's going to agree with me. If he's not, then just keep it to yourself, man.
I wonder what James Gunn thinks about all this Marvel stuff. You know, he's building his own.
Well, and I mean, and that's a good thing too. When we look at the exodus of talent from Marvel over to DC now because of James Gunn's involvement, that also should signify something to the higher ups at Disney that they don't have the pieces to play with that they used to.
Yeah, you used to be able to go after A-list, like top tier, any actor you wanted, except Leo, you could probably get. But I don't know, these days it's a tough sell. Like Timothy Chalamet, or however you say his name.
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to take Leo's advice? Not do comic book movies? Maybe that's good advice these days. So anyway, to all of our listeners, let us know what you guys are thinking. I mean, I think this CP was nothing less than just a stream of consciousness. This is our thoughts in real time of what we think the MCU is in 2024. So I don't know that it goes too much deeper than that, and I hope Marvel can turn it around.
I agree. But, 2023 was not a good year, and it doesn't look like 24 is going to be any better.
Well, with only one major release, I mean, I wouldn't expect a ton of changes, but man, I still hold out hope deep down that we'll see Deadpool, and I will call you, and I will be like, you got to see it. Like, you got to go.
Well, we'll know in about 3 months, 4 months.
That's good, yeah. That's a hope, but hope and a prayer. So, all right, to everybody tuning in, thank you guys so much for listening to the show. Be sure to continue the conversations. I'm sure everybody has a lot of thoughts after this episode. Let us know what you think, and if it's incredibly dire, we might actually have to bring some of you on the show and talk more in depth about some of this. So let us know. But you can continue the conversations at filmmakerscompass.com, our website where we have a feed of all previous episodes, as well as all of our social media links, which are at Film Comp Podcast. So you can follow me at Big Kid D-Man and CP.
You can follow me at NDCal5. Thank you for hanging out and talking movies. We will see you back here next week. Until then, keep watching movies.